This week's episode of Greetings from Storybrook is brought to you by Dog Boy, Danger on Liberty Pier by Bill Meeks, a new superhero adventure. Sometimes the murder isn't the mystery. Find out more at dogboyadventures.com.
Once upon a time, there was a vain queen who was so jealous of her beautiful stepdaughter, Snow White, that she poisoned her with an apple. But a handsome prince came along and broke the spell. Snow White and Prince Charming threw the wicked stepmother down a bottomless pit and lived happily ever after. But it turns out the pit wasn't bottomless, just very deep. And now the queen was very mad. With a spell so powerful, even she couldn't control it, she put the Charmings to sleep for 1,000 years. She also got herself in one war. Eventually, they woke up.
Greetings from Storybrooke. I'm Bill Meeks, and Anne-Marie isn't here right now. She'll be here in a minute, though. This is a special episode. A couple weekends ago, we were invited by a constant fan of the show and great friend of ours, Hope Mullinex, to be on her podcast, Hope of All Trades, to discuss Once Season 3. Now, Hope's show isn't as family-friendly and as clean as our show usually is. So, you know, if you have little kids around or you're offended by such things, I would suggest, you know, maybe just waiting. And tomorrow we're going to have another special episode that features an interview with me and Anne-Marie that we did a couple months ago for a website. But I decided just to include the first hour. And if you want to listen to the rest of it, you can go to twotruefreaks.com and look for the show Hope of All Trades. It's the Once Upon a Time Season 3 special. I'll also try and put a link to that in the show notes for this episode. And before we get into that, you know, obviously, Once Wonderland and Once Upon a Time are both coming back this week. So we will have a new episode out Saturday night. We're going to have a guest, Anne-Marie Davilar, I believe. It's been a while since I said the name out loud. We talked to her out loud. We talked to her all the time on Twitter. Like, look at me getting all tongue-tied. The thing is, I'm here by myself. Anne-Marie is usually here, so I usually have someone to bounce off of. So I'm just rambling right now. One thing I wanted to point out right here at the top before we get into it is that my book, Dog Boy, Danger on Liberty Pier, is still available, and we still have some coupon codes for you. I've went ahead and opened up a couple more free copies, and we also have a 99-cent discount that you can use by going to bit.ly/oncedogboy. Now, if you're unfamiliar with the book, basic premise, there's a 13-year-old superhero named Bronson Black. He has magical powers and magical tricks, which he uses to fight crime. It's basically the Hardy Boys, but hopefully a little less crap. And with superheroes. So, you know, go ahead and check it out if you'd like. Again, that's bit.ly/oncedogboy. And to get a free copy, there's two available. You can use the coupon code GREETINGSFROMSTORYBROOKE1. And to get 99 cents off, you can use the promo code GREETINGSFROMSTORYBROOKE2 until March. I think I have it until the 20th or so. We're also going to have a promo for the first book, Den of Thieves, coming up next weekish. I think March 11th to March 15th. It's going to be free on Amazon. So, you know, definitely check that out. Dog Boy, Den of Thieves. Okay. Well, I guess that's it. We'll go ahead and get into Hope's show. And if you're easily offended, I would turn the thing off right now.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of Hope of All Trades. My name is Hope Mullinex. I am the host of this awesome podcast show of awesome. And today we're doing something really exciting that I've been just so excited to be able to do. I've been wanting to do a roundtable for a while now. Why not do a roundtable about one of my favorite shows? I've talked about it so many times. Once Upon a Time. Woo!
Yay!
And as you can hear, I have kidnapped 3 people, and I'm holding them hostage in my basement, and my cats are, like, rubbing on them and making them sick, and we're not feeding them until they talk about Once Upon a Time. I would like to first introduce Bill and Anne-Marie from Greetings from Storybrooke podcast.
Hello!
I can you loosen these ropes on my wrist? They feel just a little tight.
I'm bleeding!
No, but that isn't bleeding through the title of one of the episodes. Spoilers.
Maybe.
Spoilers.
And then my other guest was on my Tea with Anthony show, the amazing Anthony Simontilli. I really hope I just said that right.
You said it right.
Yes!
Hello.
Now, for people who haven't heard either Greetings from Storybrooke or heard my episode with Anthony, would you guys all like to give a little intro to each of your awesome Once Upon a Time trades? I guess we'll start with Greetings from Storybrooke and then Anthony.
I'll let you take this one, Anne-Marie, because I know you've had a decent amount of magic juice. So.
Don't talk about my magic juice consumption. We do a weekly Once Upon a Time podcast. Well, we're on hiatus right now, so we've only had a couple episodes. But we do a podcast about Once Upon a Time and Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
Sometimes we like doing that one. Sometimes we hate it.
Well, let's not talk about that yet. We'll get there.
You can find that at greetingsfromstorybrooke.com, of course.
This isn't the promo part of the show.
But well, I will have every part of the show.
The more promos, the better. But yeah, as for me, well, this is Anthony again, and my Once Upon a Time thing is an online tea business, which is done through adagioteas.com. And so basically how it works is there's a whole bunch of fandoms on that page, and one of the fandoms that I've gotten myself most involved with was the Once Upon a Time one. So what I like to do is just sort of create blend concoctions that sort of go along with not each of the characters, but as many characters that I can sort of think of a good blend concoction to go for and such.
And some of the actors do have your teas.
Yes, they do, which just puts the jam on my toast. Oh, my goodness.
Anthony, I miss talking to you because you're such an adorable baby face.
So good to talk to you guys again, too.
So why are we doing this podcast right now? Like, of course, Anne-Marie mentioned that we are on hiatus. We've been on a 3-month hiatus.
So depressing.
Hey, guys.
The eternal September, I call it.
It's been okay for me because Sherlock was on hiatus for 2 years. So I'm like, 3 months, I'll work and I'll be fine.
Hey, it's been 15 years and I'm still waiting for the last season of Lois and Clark, so.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I mean, I always hear people talk about Fireflies on perpetual hiatus, so. But the new season 3B, as I like to call it, is right around the corner. It's on March 9th, and we're going to get the rest of the season, no hiatuses, no interruptions. We'll see how well they do that, because I said that for 3A, and we still got a couple weeks off. But we're going to see how well it goes, and we're going to be talking about season 3 so far, and we're also going to be talking about season 3B and our theory speculations. And just a warning, guys, this episode will have spoilers. If you haven't seen 3A, stop listening. If you don't want to know about 3B...
If you haven't watched it, why are you listening?
Yeah. Exactly. And if you don't want to know anything about 3B, we'll do another spoiler warning before we talk about that kind of stuff. What did everybody like about this first overall half season? Like, what were some of your favorite episodes, moments? Let's do ladies first. Anne-Marie.
Okay. So Neverland, I have a love-hate relationship with. I love where it got us, but it dragged on forever for me. Because Robbie Kay, amazing, absolutely fantastic. But I didn't like the island. We didn't get what I wanted out of it, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
What were some of your favorite episodes over the course of 3A?
See, asking me specifics. I don't retain that well.
I sort of like the part where there were fairy tale characters.
There was some magic involved.
I don't know.
Listen, the magic juice is flowing up here.
My favorite one was the one with Peter Pan. Oh, wait a second. That was awful.
I don't know. I kind of like that one with Emma. Yeah.
Emma and Peter Pan.
Whoa.
Have they ever done an episode that didn't have Emma in it? I don't think they have they?
No. I don't.
I don't think they really could, because, well, Savior.
I argue that I would love an entire spinoff of just, like, stuff with minor characters and have them
for the main characters. I'd be okay with.
I would love that.
So, yeah, so I could do a few episodes without Snow Charmings and stuff, Snow Charming.
We're not going to talk about that at this point in time.
Oh, we'll see. I'm a little tired too. Adam woke me up this morning, and it's not every day.
Before you responded, and I was like, "Oh, she's gonna be happy this morning."
I mean, it was one of those things. I was just like, "Adam Horowitz, I love you, but why are you waking me up at 9 a.m.?" I just went to bed like 3 hours ago. But I guess I shouldn't complain. Not everybody can say that Adam Horowitz wakes them up in the morning. All All right. What about you, Anthony? What were some of your favorite parts of Neverland?
I'd have to say that the 3B, if you divide, I guess, all the seasons into A and B halves, I think 3B is probably one of my favorites, because I think only like 1.5 episodes come to mind that really just didn't settle with me. But I think if I had to pick a favorite...
Are you saying... do you mean 3A?
Oh, crap.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Well, Anthony got in a TARDIS and like solved all the episodes already.
I was going to say, Anthony, why are we recording a podcast and not watching 3B? Because obviously you have it.
Well, I'm being chained up in this dungeon, so I'm not so inclined to share. So
I'll torture you for episodes.
That's true. That reminds me, watch out for that rat over there. He's been looking at me kind of weird.
Oh, yeah. He's been nibbling on my toes.
It's me, though. It's love nibbles.
He just wants his cat back.
I'm sorry, Anthony. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. So let me fix that alphabet mishap over there. Season 3A. I think maybe, but I'd have to, can I give it a tie between Dark Hollow and Going Home? Because I don't think I could pick one over the other. To me, those episodes had so much, like, this is going to sound a little corny, but I love the teamwork aspects of the show, like with An Apple's Red as Blood, where they're, you know, storming the castle together. I just love it when, like, they band together and they kick ass, and it's just, it's so epic. I love stuff like that. So, yeah.
By the way, you guys can totally, if you want to, swear my show. It's okay.
I was just about to say, I was like, what is the cursing policy? We didn't ask that.
I have done everything from talk about how I wanted to sit on Tom Hiddleston's face to like swearing about every curse word you can think of. As long as it's not like racial slurs, I don't care.
Well, that would best not happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a section when I was recording with Brie and Alex on an episode. We talked about who was the kinkiest character in Storybrooke and how Archie is probably like the closet kinkiest character. So it's okay. We can go there at my show. Nice. Greetings
well,
from
gosh,
Storybrooke,
the
X-rated version.
I know, we might have to edit.
Gosh, I'm darn glad that we can curse on here, Hope. I don't know. It's really flipping great.
All right, what about you, Bill? What were some of your favorite points of season 3A?
I hated the entire season. No, I'm kidding. Peter Pan.
Some people have hated this entire half season.
They have. There is some haterade flowing out there.
My favorite is when they're like, Peter Pan is not like the movie version. Well, I'm sorry. You're 3 seasons and Once Upon a Time. I'm pretty sure you should know this by now.
The thing is, and this is what I've said about Peter from the beginning, is Peter Pan is exactly like the movie version. We're just seeing it from the adult's point of view. We're not seeing it from the point of view, oh, the kids are getting one over on all the adults, and all the adults are lame. We're seeing, man, this kid keeps freaking biting at my ankles. What's going on here? You know, like, we're seeing Peter Pan from the perspective of the adults that he's getting one over on. So, you know, that's one of the things I liked about it, actually, was just that it felt like the portrayal felt so true to the character. When he was actually older, the Malcolm version of the character, he was just a complete slime ball. Yeah. And you saw that a little bit in Going Home in that scene in Gold Shop. You saw a little bit of that slime ball come through. But, you know, for a big part of it, like Peter Pan portrayal, it was just like it was so true to the character while kind of just like twisting it and, I don't know, making it a little darker, which I really like. And I also really liked the dynamic that popped up between Charming and Captain Hook, too.
Yes! My Davy Jones ship! I love the Davy Jones ship. Like, I'm the captain of that friendship ship. I love it.
Nice. But, it was really interesting to see that develop, because I don't think the characters had too many run-ins outside of Hook being like, what the hell is this guy doing here, you know, when we're trying to deal with you know, everything else that's going on last season, right? And it was kind of cool to kind of, you know, see them form that early bond that will blossom into a father and son-in-law bond. I'm sure of it.
Oh, don't even go there.
Hashtag Captain Swan.
Oh, we're talking hashtags already.
I mean, I actually actually really appreciated that relationship as well, because I argued through most of season through that Charming had no guy friends.
He did need a good guy friend.
Yeah. Because, like, we see, and I still argue Emma doesn't really have any lady friends either. Emma has zero friends.
After she doesn't know how to be a girl.
I mean, but even after losing August, she really doesn't have many friends because we don't really have Ruby. She doesn't hang out with anybody but Mary Margaret, but Mary Margaret became her mom, so she lost her friend there, and then she lost August. Like, Emma has no friends.
There hasn't been time for friends. They've been busy saving people's lives, defeating shadows, you know.
Yeah, but, like, one of my least favorite things that got cut out of the Girls' Night Out episode, there was a scene where Archie and David actually were at a bar together, and they were talking about David's affair, and he was getting advice from Archie about how to go about this.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yeah. Was that, like, on a DVD or just, like,
no, Raphael Sabarge, actually, Once Podcast interviewed Raphael Sabarge, and he was telling them about that scene that got cut out, and it was never, there's still promo pics of it. Like, if you Google, like Archie and David and, like, the title episode, you can find the promo pic for it. It never made it to a DVD or anything.
So there's deleted scenes that aren't even on YouTube or recorded.
The one that I want to know the most about 2 years later is in Hat Trick. August is standing outside of Jefferson's door. Uh-huh. What happened in that conversation? I need to know.
I can't imagine what interest you would have in a scene like that, Hope. Honestly.
I mean, no. I mean, Jefferson's not my favorite character, and I'm not wearing Sebastian Stan on my shirt. What of it?
Hey, is Sebastian Stan in the cell over there in the dungeon?
I see him. I see him over there.
Don't tell anybody. He's over there with Tom Hiddleston. No lie, we actually, in one of my episodes, we were talking about, it's my episode, if you guys look it up, it's in our general posts of our Two True Freaks podcast. And I think it's called, like, Hope and Chris Shoot the Shit or something like that. And we were talking, talking about whatever, and we were talking about movies we had seen in the last 6 months. And we were joking around about Hunger Games and how everybody in our podcasting group would die Hunger Games style. Because there's, like, 20 podcasters in our group, so. And my death was I would drown in the cum of my male harem.
Nice.
Wow.
Of my actor male harem.
Nice.
So that was my death. So, yes, there is Tom Hiddleston and Sebastian Stan and Benedict Cumberbatch over there in the corner.
Nice.
So what did I like?
They're just preparing. They're storing up and getting ready for the full release later on down the line, I guess.
Oh, this is gonna be a fun show. I know it already.
Anne Marie's tweeting about magic juice, so
don't mind me and my magic juice love.
Oh my god, are you tweeting our show right now?
Maybe
do it, because I won't be able to look at it until we're done. So some of the things I liked about season 3A is I did like the Neverland arc. I felt like it was constantly moving. And what I like about it is I tend to prefer character episodes over plot-driven episodes, because I'm a very firm believer you have to have character to drive the plot, and it's never a good thing when your plot's driving the characters. And so, like, I felt like there was so much character development. You know, we see someone charming make big bounds in their relationships. We see Emma really embrace being the savior, and like, we pretty much everybody went through a change, and I loved Regina the entire time, because she was the only one that had a lick of common sense.
Except when it comes to fashion choices for Neverland. She wore those big shoulder pads and stuff. Like,
jacket had to go. The jacket.
That's not great attire for the jungle, Regina. Usually you're so fashion forward, and you just kind of failed.
I just like how the actor...
$2,000 jacket. It's okay.
I just like how they were like, yeah, the actors are totally going to be changing clothes in the scene. And I don't think anybody changed clothes except for Gold this entire season.
Well, no, and I think, didn't they go out of the way to say that they all specifically brought a suitcase so that their characters had to change?
Yeah, when did they have time to pack, though? Because we see them jump, like Greg and Tamara jump in with Henry. And then we see them, like, watching, and Hook shows up, and they're like, oh, let's go on the boat. And then suddenly Snow has a backpack?
I remember Emma talking specifically about this on a panel last summer, like, right before the show came back. She was saying that it wasn't in the script or anything. The prop people weren't ready for it, but they grabbed, like, you know, luggage and stuff to take on the boat with them just so they could maybe have a change of clothes, because they had spent the beginning of last season in Fairytaleland in the Enchanted Forest, Snow and Emma had, and they had to wear the same costumes the whole time. And they were like, okay, someone find a trunk or a bag or something and let's get it in the scene. Well, they're not paying attention, you know.
They don't care. Yeah.
They don't realize how hard the fans analyze these things.
Oh, no, they know. They know.
I once saw this thing. One of my friends pointed out, and I don't know, maybe it was you. If I'm repeating an old conversation, but they saw promo pictures for the last episode of 3A, and they looked at Emma's pants, and they said, Emma wouldn't wear that. She lost her memories. And they were right, just by looking at her pants. It was insane.
Wow. Interesting.
What? I love this fandom.
See, like, that's right on the line of, oh, the costume designer was paying attention and dead clock is right two times a day kind of thing. It's like, you know, they could have completely called that. It could have been, you know, a number 23 situation where they're like 2 + 2 + 2. Oh, Emma's pants. Oh, she has no memory.
Yeah. And the other last thing I liked is the little bit of Storybrooke we got. I really wanted more Storybrooke this season, but I really enjoyed that time that we had in Storybrooke.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too.
Well, it seems like, and I'll keep this pretty spoiler free, but it seems like it's like that might be rectified in 3B.
Mm.
So.
Thank goodness.
And I don't think, Bill, I don't think I heard from you. What was your favorite episode?
My favorite episode, I'm trying to remember the name of it. Was it Think
We're
Lovely
not good
Thoughts?
With episode names in our world.
I think Think Lovely Thoughts, it was the Malcolm episode. Just because I thought it was like, it was dark and tragic, and it gave a lot of answers, and it was entertaining, and overall, I just really, really liked it. And just how much he loathed his son, it was just creepy. And I love, you know, when any fictional work can like just completely creep me out and make me doubt my trust of anybody in this human race, you know. So.
And probably my favorite episode is probably Good Form, but the thing is about pretty much every episode, I had stuff that I liked and disliked about all of 3A. Right. So it's hard for me to pick a specific favorite, but Killian is in my top favorite character, so I really liked him, and I really enjoyed the Tink episode, too.
I like those two, but I wanted more of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted more. I'm not fulfilled with their time on Neverland. I know we're not getting any more in 3B, but I want a flashback or something to tell us about their time in Neverland.
Maybe they could do Once Upon a Time in Neverland instead of Wonderland next year.
God, if we're so lucky.
Oh, girl.
Sorry.
I totally wrote an entire article about that exact free thing.
Yeah,
like, you know, about how if we didn't go back in the present, that's okay. But if we didn't visit again in flashbacks, that's a huge tragedy.
It really is. We need to know where. There is so much character development with all of them that could come from that. And I don't know.
It would just be an interesting story, you know?
Yeah, it really would.
It's just some nice one-off adventures set in the Once universe.
Yeah, and they do love a good one-off adventure.
I mean, it's not out of the reign of possibility because they always said with the spinoff that one season would just be one world and then season two would be a completely different world if it continues. God, I hope it doesn't get canceled.
they better do it right, but we'll talk. Yeah.
I know. They shot themselves in the ass with that one.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so maybe we'll, for Neverland could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I was always saying that I wanted Once Upon a Time in Oz, but now we're getting Oz, so we're not going to be getting Once Upon a Time in Oz.
That's the main stage attraction. That's not, you know, the side stage where, I don't know, John Lennon's son's band plays when the main band is setting up.
Yeah. Now, let's talk about, since we're already starting to touch about that, what do you think could have gone better? Anthony, let's start with you.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, Bill, but I will have to provide some foil to your favorite episode because actually I think Think Lovely Thoughts was my least favorite, primarily because, I know, I'm so sorry to say it, but for me, what annoyed me was you can tell that, and I thought that was probably one of the more plot-driven bits because I felt like it was out of Rumple's character to withhold that, especially from Belle and such, well, whatever bell shadow thing, whatever that whole situation was. But he mentioned it on so many occasions, and then just looking at the whole picture, to me it just felt that the authors were like, okay, we have to, you know, dance around this subject. So we know that Rumpel knows Peter, but it just didn't seem like even an abusive father-son relationship to me. So I kind of felt that was a rabbit out of the hat. But that's just me.
That's fair. Like, two points. One, like, Belle is the person probably that Rumpel trusts the most. Rumpel still doesn't trust her very much, I think. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's it. I'm just agreeing. Okay. He's trusting.
Yeah, and two, actually, Rumpel's role in the whole Neverland situation was probably one of my least favorite parts of the season, unfortunately.
He needed to stick with the main group.
Yeah. It was like 4 episodes of him sitting on a log with fake Belle.
With fake Belle.
By the campfire.
Because, like, seriously, Regina was the only one that got shit done.
I wonder if he made out with the shadow or anything
really?
Like that.
Really? Oh,
I just imagine, like, Marilyn Manson's really long tongue coming out of Belle's mouth.
The beautiful people.
Oh, my God.
Magic juice out the nose. Magic
juice. Nice. You still have magic juice left, I'm surprised.
Not very much.
So, I can see the whole, like, Pan being Rumpel's father thing being a big annoyance, because that makes one other person on top of it related to Henry.
The family tree. Yeah. Oh, dear.
Everyone is related to Henry.
I know.
Very complicated.
Oi.
Like, I actually, you know, early on in the season, I was thinking that Pan was going to be, you know, Rumpel's boyhood friend, and they go off into an adventure in Neverland, and something goes sideways, and Rumpel gets sent back or something. I would have liked that, but I mean, like I said, you know, I really like the way it turned out, too, but I can see why people have issues with it, and they probably could have handled it a different way that would have, you know, shut those people down, but opened up a whole nother group of people with a different set of issues.
Definitely, yeah. People have comments.
I think my favorite comment about Henry's family is Michael Raymond James, who plays Neil, said in an interview, "I don't even think Ancestry.com can get Henry's family."
That sums it up.
And I was like, yes, I love Mikey so much. All right, we'll keep on the boys. Bill, what were some of your least favorite parts of this season?
Stuff and things and junk. What did I put down here? Oh yeah, Medusa was awful. Like that was like a waste of a flashback. Basically,
that was a waste of an episode.
That was a waste of an entire episode. That's mine too.
That was horrible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And as has been mentioned, I really wish that they had devoted a little more time to the background of Neverland. Like, we got like 2 little flashbacks of, you know, Hook's early days there and Neil's days. Well, I don't think even Neil was involved, really. It felt like it would have been a bigger payoff overall for the half season if they had given us a little bit more background for these characters in Neverland, maybe presented us with, I don't know, a sword fight between Hook and Pan on a pirate ship. You know, that would be cool because, right. You know, that's what you think of when you think of Peter Pan and Captain Hook, right? That would have been nice.
I was waiting for that. Every time that Pan and Hook were in a shot together, I was just like, is this going to be it? Oh, God.
Yeah, they never really even had a direct conflict. I mean, they had a little kind of like tete-a-tete, why don't we try and negotiate something when him and Charming were going up the mountain. But, you know, they never really had a direct conflict. And you'd think for, you know, the Batman and Joker of, I don't know, Fairy Tale Land that
they
might have faced off a little more, right? Mm-hmm. And one other thing, I thought that, you know, the Save Henry episode where they show how Henry came to Storybrooke and stuff, it just felt a little too easy overall. And this
it
might
felt
be
way too easy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It might be a little me projecting my personal theories about how that might have happened onto the episode too, but it just felt like, one, Regina just walking out of Storybrooke, obvious once they do it, right? But, you know, for months and years and everything, everyone was like, well, how did Henry get into Storybrooke? No one could leave. No one could leave. Not even Regina. No, Regina could just walk out. No problem. And I don't know. I did like the tie back into John and Michael right at the end. But overall, it just seemed a little too easy. It seemed like there should have been a little more complication, a little more scheming, a little more conniving, at least on Gold's part, right?
Because I was claiming that August was involved somehow because he could come in and out of Storybrooke.
Yeah, because he was the only one in that time besides Regina who really knew what the real deal was, right?
Mm-hmm. And the only real explanation we ever got about that even came in season two. In like season two and Tiny, it was when Cora and Regina and Hook were all talking, and Hook was like, well, can't we leave? And Regina's like, yeah, but we'll lose our magic. I didn't even remember that conversation. Of course, I really don't like that episode, but like, I blocked that entire thing out, so I was just like, I was incredibly confused about how Regina left this town. And I would even just like a scene with her sitting in a car and just stepping over, or like, you know, just stepping over the town line for the first time and seeing it affect her, I think that would have been a lot more effective.
Yeah, yeah, like, you're right. Like, even if they had just put a little scene there when she went to get the baby, you know, that she could step over that line. That would have helped a little bit, make it a little clearer, too.
Would have been fun, though, if there was a scene where Emma was outside, or Regina was outside of Storybrooke, and she just happened to bump into Emma, and they were just like, oh, sorry, and they just, like, walked off. And then, like, a few years later, just like, oh, my God.
And you know what? They never really gave us a solid answer on who wrote the book. And I thought that was supposed to be coming. I mean, we know kind of maybe – I don't know.
I think it just manifested.
You think? Like it was just like –
I think it
like...
just appeared. It was built into the curse thanks to the Blue Fairy. Mm-hmm. And it just appeared when the questioning began.
Well, I think we
– It's not said, but this is, you know – Anne Marie's theory of knowledge.
I think we can all agree that the Blue Fairy knows way more than she's letting on at all times. Right?
Absolutely.
I can see that.
Well, we're still on this part. Anthony, I don't think I ever have your theory about where the book came from.
I remember. Oh, sorry if I cut you off.
I just realized I had terrible grammar just then.
It's grammar Nazis. So but let's see. I remember when I was stalking the Once Upon a Time wiki page in season two, there was like a bullet list of all things that they were going to address. And I don't know if this was just poor journalism, for lack of a better word, on the wiki page's part. But I read somewhere there was like things that they're going to be revealed in season two. Where the book came from. Jasmine. Rapunzel. Blah, blah, blah. And then I remember they had that whole idea shift. And so they said in an interview that they had to take quote-unquote toys off the shelf. So maybe that's why the whole book thing got messed up, because it sounded like the book had this – it was going to be a major plot point. And maybe it will be, because it wasn't really discussed much, because it just appeared in Snow White's attic one day at the perfect time. But who knows? Maybe the Blue Fairy had her hand in there. I wouldn't be surprised. I'd definitely love to see more of that fairy conniving action.
See, I'm sure we won't hear much about this from them until they actually do the reveal, but I have a feeling that they'd pretty much plan for that all to be machinations of August. And now that August...
is a child?
And the actor left the show, I guess, from what I've heard, under not-so-pleasant circumstances, kind of effed-up circumstances.
Well, what were circumstances? Because I've heard something similar, but I don't know the exact reason.
Oh, I just heard he wasn't happy on the show when he got a better offer, basically.
I mean, I can understand. They totally shanked his character out of season two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially when he seemed like he was going to be so pivotal at the end of season one, right?
Yeah!
Yes!
And then he just vanished!
Mm-hmm.
So sad. Sad when he just vanished.
Dude, I'd be pissed off, too. There's a reason we lost Ruby. Though, it was tweeted the other day. Yes.
Is she? I hadn't heard that, actually.
Yes. You don't troll the Twitters like we do.
Yes, we're Twitter trolls. Troll.
Troll the Twitters.
Now, Emery, do you want to go first or me? I don't really care.
I don't know. Where are we?
Well, we're talking about our least favorite parts of season three. A becomes 4H. Go.
Oh no. Don't do
Can
that.
Can you guys
to me.
Both go simultaneously?
1, 2, 3.
Hunger Games.
No, you go, and then I'll jump in.
All right.
That's what I do.
I have to agree with Bill. I questioned a lot of the flashbacks and why we were getting those stories, because sometimes it just felt like, well, Jenny and Josh are main cast. I guess we have to give them characters. And I feel like they do that a lot with those two. So they just have to push these episodes because it's in their contracts or something. I don't know.
Okay, I'll buy that.
But, like, the ones I just didn't get is I've been arguing for a while now that I'm really over Snow, Charming, Regina, Rumple stories, only because a lot of them are starting to get repeated. Like, I really didn't need the story about Snow getting her mojo over a sword. I mean, because it was the exact same story that we got in season one. We know she hates Regina. We know that there's this fight's going on. I didn't have to see her, you know, get her excitement about, let's go to war with Regina. I really didn't care. I was also really upset because we've been hearing about, I read several articles about Cynthia Walls coming back, and he was the guy who played Lancelot, and his character right around that time got killed on Teen Wolf, and so it's just like, oh my god, he's going to be Lancelot. So when I heard that there was going to be Excalibur, I was waiting, and I was so disappointed.
Yeah, that episode, really, they could have left that. I don't even remember what the Neverland version part of it was.
Yeah, and even
that's the problem. Like, if I can't even remember what was connected with that event, something was missed.
And then, like, I just didn't get Medusa being there. Like, it just felt so out of place. It had nothing to do with anything. And I really didn't care about the Charming's honeymoon at all.
Yeah, and the thing with Medusa was they didn't even give her, like, a proper due. She was just kind of like that monster, you know, across the room. There wasn't
any. Who thinks of Medusa that way?
Yeah,
I mean, she's so good. Like, there's so much behind being, oh my god, I just totally blanked on what kind of creature Medusa, a Gorgon. There's so much behind of, like, what a Gorgon is and how to become a Gorgon. Like, that's a story of itself.
Yeah, and even using a character like that for a one-off appearance is good, but literally she had, like, what, maybe two lines, if that. I don't even know if she spoke.
I don't know
spoke.
If there was lines.
She didn't speak.
Yeah, she didn't That's speak. She was just kind of to use a character that big as far as, you know, global knowledge of the character and everything, and just kind of make her a freak of the week. You know, it seemed kind of off-putting, you know?
Yeah. Right, like when they started that episode and mentioned Medusa, I got really excited because I love mythology in that sense. And then it was just like, this was just a filler, wasn't it?
Anthony, what were you going to say?
No, I was just agreeing because, you know, Medusa is such an iconic, you know, character because everyone knows, you know, Medusa, look at her, turn to stone. And it's exactly how you guys said. And it just felt it was filler. And I get this vision of, you know, in the fourth Harry Potter movie, they pass a bag around. It's like they reached their hand in and pulled out, okay, let's use Medusa this week. So it's just upsetting. Also, I love Greek mythology as well. So,
yes. You know. I just love that Adam and Eddie still deny, like, no, we had done Greek myths. Midas, Pegasus sails, Medusa. Come on, guys.
Pandora's box.
And Pandora's box. Yeah. Like, you guys are doing Greek mythology. But, like, it's just we didn't get so many scenes that needed to be in Neverland. Like, we still don't know what deal Hook made with Pan to get off the island.
Yeah.
We got no time of Bay in Neverland. We got him on the Jolly Roger, but not in Neverland.
Right.
But the one that bothers me the most is Tinkerbell and Peter Pan never had a scene together. And it's exactly how I feel about Archie and August in Storybrooke. Because when you have Peter Pan and Pinocchio never having a scene together, and then you do the same thing with Tinkerbell and Peter Pan never having a scene together,
right.
They're iconic literary duos. How can you not put them in a scene?
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, even with just Peter Pan and Tinkerbell and everything, like, it's just, you know, so iconic and so, like, they basically denied you all of the moments you think of when you think of the character, which I can see a sense in kind of, you know, trying to turn around expectations and stuff like that. But you still kind of have to pay lip service to it, right? At least.
Yeah.
You know, even if I don't know, like my example from earlier, the sword fight between Peter Pan and Captain Hook on the pirate ship, even if it's like a scene and then they're like, oh, let's team up or whatever. That's fine. Or, you know, twist it after that. But, you know, just have the image there so you can, I don't know, put it out on the promo circuit so I can grab it for our album art for the episode.
Yeah. And it was just weak writing. I mean, because Tinkerbell says, "Oh, Peter Pan, trust me." Well, we just have to, you know, go along with it because we have nothing to show mm-hmm. that Peter Pan actually trusts Tinkerbell. Like, we just have to agree with her. And instead of, and I had that issue a lot, like in the Ariel episode, you know, I had a lot of problems with them just being like, "Yeah, me and Eric are totally in love." Well, can I see you guys falling in love? That's what makes Skin Deep so good, because we see Belle and Rumpelstiltskin falling in love.
Mm. Right.
And it makes it, it gives it so much energy. But when you just tell me, like, "Yeah, I love that guy," I guess so. I have to believe you. And that entire conversation between her and Eric were so stilted. Like, "Oh, it's you. It's you too. We're so happy." And I've met Gil McKinney. He's so amazing. And he's happy. And he's a great actor. And none of his costumes gives him any justice about how handsome that man is in real life. Just saying. And so, like, I was just really upset with a lot of the choices in writing and why they chose some scenes over other. And then Storybrooke, but I'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but I think the general impression I'm getting here from everyone is that there was just a little bit of an unbalance. Like, it was good over – quality was 10 out of 10. The balance was, like, 7 out of 10 for this season, right?
I would give it 5 out of 10. I would have – instead of some of the flashbacks, I would rather have more present-day Storybrooke and showing what was going on there.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like you said before. It just reminds me of the whole mantra, show, don't tell, because it's like you said, we have to rely on sheer dialogue to understand these characters' emotions. It would have been more efficient and wise to have us come to those conclusions on our own through a backstory or just more interactions mm-hmm. present.
Mm-hmm. Anne-Marie, what about you? What were some of your weak parts?
Oh, I think what I put in here was that I wanted more of the Killian and Hulk stuff together, which we kind of already touched on. I don't know, because I was just sort of jumping in on everybody. I think I covered myself.
All right. I just want to make sure you got your
I'm good. I feel good.
Well, you can start the next point. What are some of the what are some of the fan theories that didn't pan out? Oh, I get it. I'm I said pan. So, Amory, why don't you start?
See, and I feel bad because I don't really follow too many fan theories.
Sorry, I just looked at your note. I'm sorry.
I don't really follow them because I think when I start listening to everybody else, I get confused, not confused, but overwhelmed in respect to my own theories and our theories that we talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, greetings from storybrooke.com, right?
Right, greetings from storybrooke.com has some amazing theories. But I know I really, really wanted Bill's theory of all of the news vans invading Storybrooke to happen mm-hmm. because I thought it was hilarious. I don't know. Yep. I just like them having to cover themselves from, like, quote unquote normal people.
Mm-hmm. But that's what made Greg Mandel interesting in the first few.
Yes,
before he found out like who he was.
Before we knew like they were going that way, he was cool. Like, he was interesting before we knew who he was.
And then they killed him off, like, as soon as we found out.
Thank God.
So upset.
Very unceremoniously.
Opposite reactions.
Yeah, they basically permanently killed him off with a line of dialogue when they mentioned that, you know, his entrails were spread about the Neverland.
Yes. World.
I feel like
a shadow flying around somewhere.
I think that somehow Greg's shadow is going to somehow come back and help them. Because we see that Blue came back to life when Peter Pan's shadow was released. So I think I have an idea that the void between all the worlds is where the shadows and the raids and all of them lie. I think that Greg's somewhere in that kind of void because his shadow was released as well. But now he's there.
I think his shadow is the new quote-unquote shadow of Neverland. Because the shadow is dead. So Neverland is just a void. So I think Greg's shadow is the shadow.
I like that. I like that.
Like a dark one, but shadow.
Yes. 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 See, every now and then I have a good one. Gosh darn it.
But also the guy who rocked the fuck out with Guar in Empire Records.
Oh, yay.
I love Ethan Embry. So I've actually been kind of thinking that the Peter Pan shadow was actually, before Pan got there, was a good spirit. Like, it was a protector of children's dreams. because Malcolm always said when he was a kid, he always dreamed of Neverland.
Yes.
And the shadow would be kind of, like, guide people into the dream world and take care of children's dreams, because the shadow even told him, like, this world didn't exist until you came here.
Right.
And so it was actually a good spirit, but it was forced to obey Pan. So now it's back doing its kind of bidding, its good dreamness.
That'd be a good Sandman tie-in. Like, I'm surprised they use that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they have had the Sandman stuff, right? Because that's Warner Brothers, DC, and all that.
Well, no, like the original Fable of the Sandman.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking Neil Gaiman Sandman.
Neil Gaiman did not invent the Fable of the Sandman.
Trust me, I know that. There was the Golden Age Sandman character.
Here we go.
And then there was also the one in Rise of the Guardian, Sandy. Hey.
Yes, the sleepy guy.
Oh my god, I love that movie. I love that everyone's shipping Elsa and Jack Frost together.
See, but that's precious.
That is so precious.
Dude, there should be a Once Upon a Time Rise of the Guardians crossover.
Yes. Oh. Like, can you imagine Emma's face if Santa Claus walked in?
Dude, ABC, if you want Once Upon a Time to get to season 6, Christmas episode starring Santa Claus. Oh, done.
Yes.
Done. Print money.
I think Emma would just be so done with everything. She would just throw a Henry in her bug and whatever ship war is going on then, who's her new beau, and just drive out of town.
Who even knows at that point? Oy.
I hope actually the next shipping war is between two dwarfs, like Grumpy and Sleepy or something. That'd be nice.
Didn't you guys, like, for a while ship Sneezy with Lacey on your show?
Did we?
Yes.
Memory. It was,
you called it Sleazy.
Yes, I remember that now.
Yeah, it was in season 2 when both of them had amnesia. We didn't know, and you shipped them together and called it Sleazy.
Sleazy, yeah.
Oh, we're special.
I like that.
Nice. We're good.
And it makes really good thematic sense for, you know, what was going on with Belle at the time, too. So.
Seriously, Sleazy.
Well, I'm going to back in. Anthony, what were some of your theories that didn't quite go the way you wanted for season 3A?
You mean 3A, right?
Yes, 3A. Right. We're not talking 3B series theories yet.
I would say this is more of a theory put on hold, because when I found out that they were going to do, there was going to be another Hook-centric themed episode, I had a feeling that his story would follow like the paradigm of a fallen sailor or something along those lines. But honestly, I was anticipating him to either be related to Davy Jones or, you know, somehow becoming Davy Jones. I don't know. We still haven't seen that. I don't think that venue isn't exactly crossed off in terms of exploration, because his last name is Jones, and I feel like that isn't a coincidence. And I was hoping to see more of this realm that he's a part of. I don't even know what kingdom that's part of. So I was just kind of hoping to see more along the lines of that.
See, like, I've been a little confused on that, too. Like, is that just, like, the Enchanted Forest that he's in, or is it just another realm that, and then he came back to the Enchanted Forest? Because I know he was in the Enchanted Forest, right, because him and Mila, he ran into Mila, obviously, and...
I think it's the Enchanted Forest. I think the war he's talking about that the king is fighting is the Ogre Wars that Rumpelstiltskin's fighting in. Because they're in the same timeline because they're both old as balls. I know, I'm such a classy lady.
See, do we know how long the Ogre Wars went, though? Because, I mean, he went to Neverland, so that in, you know, with the time dilation and everything there, if he was gone 10 years, he was gone 50 years.
We don't know where Killian falls in Rumpel's timeline. We just know that Rumpel was Rumpel, and then when he met Killian, and then he was the Dark One later, and then shortly after that, they both Killian went to Neverland. Mm-hmm. Now, I think the thing with the Ogre Wars that's so big, that kind of keyed me in good form, is Liam and Killian were talking about how the king wanted to take out a species, not like a group of people. They said species.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I think they were, and it's kind of interesting because it's also kind of a version of chemical warfare, because that's why they were trying to find the Dream Shade. And it's kind of like that weird, darker take on it.
That plant ended up being a huge plot point this half season anyway.
That was a His brother's death was the dumbest ass death in the world.
Hey, look, it's fine.
Toyin's like, don't do the thing. I'm going to do the thing. Just to throw out, too, a lot of people were really upset with it because it was such a trigger warning for something. People, because he cut himself on his wrist. So it was a huge trigger warning for a lot of people as well out there. And I was like, there's a lot more better ways. Like, maybe he like was just kind of kidding around and fell on it or something. Right. But, like, just be like, hey, I'm going to do this thing. Don't do that. Oh, well, brother, sorry.
Just take, like, a bite of it.
And dead.
So, I guess, that leaves me. Oh, yes, I run a podcast. So, the biggest thing that really just upset me was in pretty much everything with the Home Office. I can see why they made it pan and why they did all that. It was just the fan theories about the Home Office were so much better than what the Home Office actually was.
The Home Office ended up being crap.
And just because they gave us such specific... No, I think when Greg was first there, because you can see the clear change in direction when, like, Cora died.
Totally.
When Greg first came there, I think they were building it to be something, because they gave us such specific details, like Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Right.
Because you guys know what Carlisle, Pennsylvania is?
Like nothing, yeah.
It's a military town that trains high-ranking generals in the army.
Oh.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think they were originally building it to be something so much bigger. And I wanted, kind of like what Bill wanted, with like all this outside world coming in. And I wanted a three-way war between Storybrooke, the Home Office, and King George. Because with all these major players like the Charmings and Regina there, and King George is just like, hey, why don't I take over this town while everyone is gone?
Yes! The whole King George thing really bothered me. Like, he had, like, one episode and then, gone.
See, it depends on how you take it, though. Because if you watch Child of the Moon, he just waltzes off into the night. But yes. In the deleted scenes, he's actually chained up in the mines. The Charmings have him kept down there.
See, and I haven't seen any of the deleted scenes. So I'm...
That is the best scene of Tiny. Because there's a point where King George looks at David and goes, there is darkness in your heart, Prince Charming, and it will come for you. It was the best scene of Tiny, and would have saved that freaking episode.
Things to download. Ding, 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 ding.
See, yeah. You know, one thing. I'm just going to jump in here and steamroll over all of you. I hope that's okay.
That's all right.
Yeah. No, but which
a hot steamroller from Bill Mix. Oh God, I'm so sorry.
Wow. 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 Wow.
Wow, still be my friend.
Now I'm trying to remember what my original point was.
Yes, I stopped you.
No, it felt like either they just had a huge change of heart or somebody came in and put their boot on the back of their neck as far as like where it seemed like the show was going at the end of season two and where it was actually going by the time season three started.
Well, they got rights for Neverland about halfway through season two. The last,
and that's when that probably took off because I know they've been fighting for that from the beginning.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Which we'd have faulted them if they wouldn't have gone to Neverland.
Anthony,
part of me actually thinks, and this is more—I don't know. I think this is just me, just really liking Captain Swan or something. I don't know. But
Hashtag Captain Swan.
No.
Hashtag Emma needs no man. Hashtag how Emma got her groove back. You're saying, Anthony, I'm so sorry.
Sorry.
So Captain Hook, he was a recurring or guest character or something, but even like as a guest character, he had more appearances than people who were slated as mains, like Red and Bell. So I think that they didn't anticipate the fan reaction to be so great, so they just kind of took him and run with it. And that's just what I think, I guess. Uh-huh.
But yeah, I can definitely see that too, especially because we cover ratings every week at greetingsfromstorybrooke.com. And I remember last season, like right towards the end, the ratings were going, whoo. Yep. So I think they were like, okay, whatever people are loving, let's really, really focus on that. And then let's find something else that they like and let's focus on that in the next half of the season. Which is why we're going to Oz, which I love. Although I know they've wanted to go to Oz for a while, too.
I'm a little bit scared about going to Oz, though, because Wonderland is Wonderland and Oz are, like, my two of my favorite literary stories. Like, I've grown up with Wizard of Oz. I've grown up with Alice in Wonderland. And so I'm, as the way Wonderland has gone, it makes me really scared about going to Oz. And there's just one thing, like, I'm so, and we'll talk about this in theories in a minute, but I'm so set on one theory that if it does not happen, it would greatly determine whether or not I keep watching the show.
You know what? I bet you I could outline your entire theory right now, but I'm going to we'll wait.
I'm pretty sure I've emailed it to you guys. My last point, did you guys ever notice that Regina at any point in time could actually invade Storybrooke with an army?
Oh.
Just because all of her soldiers got transported too, or?
Yeah. I noticed that last time I watched the pilot, that all her soldiers got sucked up in the curse and are now chilling in Storybrooke.
It feels like, unless you're a main character, you're like hiding from everyone else from Fairy Tale Land.
That we see in the episode The Evil Queen, that a lot of them actually like working for Regina and like bullying the peasants. So even if she doesn't have an army, she could at least have a militia.
A little something. Yeah.
That sounds
okay.
Fair.
Yeah.
Some guys out in the woods waiting, watching, which I guess is, you know, hewing pretty closely to, you know, their role in Fairy Tale Land too. So.
Well, anybody have any last points about 3A before we start jumping into 3B?
Oh, yeah. Me. Because you never actually talked to me about fan theories.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm heartbroken.
Well, it's okay. You tried to kill me in your last episode.
I did, and I gave you a big steamroller too, unfortunately. But let's see here. Panry. I like when Henry's, you know, soul or whatever went into Pan's body for like that week and a half or whatever that was going on. Everyone was like, is he going to be, you know, the new Henry, you know, from here on out? I'm really disappointed that didn't go down because I hate Jared Gilmore. No, I don't hate him as a person. He seems like a perfectly nice kid. And I think he might grow into the role in this next half season for sure.
God, I hope so. Sorry.
You saw hints of that in the latter half of 3A. But, you know, I loved Robbie Kay so much more than I tolerate Jared Gilmore.
Yes.
And it would have been so great to just have him stick around for the rest of the series. But, you know, that kind of breaks my heart a little bit. But I'll deal.
The only thing I want to know what was happening, because when I actually just noticed it when I was watching Going Home last night, when Pan and Henry finally switch back to their regular bodies and they're all running around trying to find Henry, Henry comes out of the clock tower.
Yes.
That means Pan was in the clock tower. Who's in the clock tower?
Yeah, Maleficent.
Yeah.
But isn't that the last known location of the dagger as well?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good point. I never thought about it that way.
There's all sorts of stuff in the library in Storybrooke. Like, that's where...
Maleficent's den, or if we want to call it that.
That was, like, Regina's secondary safe house outside of the grave.
Yeah.
For all of her business. So what was Pan doing in there? Who knows? But if they ever bring him back, I'm sure we'll find out. Like, that was one thing. Was one thing that I kind of keyed on watching the season finale was just like, he was in the clock tower. He wasn't just high. He had to be up there for a reason, right?
Anthony, any last things about 3A?
I will say one thing. Whoever choreographed the dances, I hope gets either more training or does not have a job again. I feel bad, but the dances were painful. Is it just me?
Are you talking about, like, in the aerial episode?
In the aerial episode around the campfire. I mean, you had the dance in The Miller's Daughter, which was fantastic. I thought Cinderella's dance was nice, but oh my gosh, it was painful.
See, I was too busy looking at their terrible 80 prom dresses because I don't know what the hell Snow and Ariel were wearing in that.
I don't know what that was.
You know what?
Literally a piece of cloth wrapped around them.
And that was the first time we've seen Snow White in, like, a short dress above the knees. So it was, like, really jarring for her character. For me.
You know, I will say when you said choreographer, right into my head came the image from the Ariel episode. So, and Hope had that, I think, as a main image, too. So I think you're onto something here. I think you're onto something here.
The Ariel episode, I wish it was better.
Me too.
The first half of it's so slow. Second half of it, Awesome. Regina gets stabbed with a dingle hopper.
See, like, I thought in the Ariel episode, it's at certain points, Regina was over the top as Ursula, but I think that was more Lana trying to do, what was her name? The woman who played the mom on She's the Sheriff, who voiced Ursula, trying to do an impression of her. Or whatever, and it just seemed almost too character, especially for Regina, especially for the character.
I don't know. Ariel's pretty simple. She might have needed to get it through her skull.
Yeah, I guess you're right. You know, they say, you know, the more iconic the portrayal, the more it resonates with people. So I guess if Regina does the character Ursula, you know, it might tie into Ariel's ignorant position more.
So I'm wondering if we're going to get Yvette Nicole Brown back as Goldilocks and Ursula in future seasons, because she is Goldilocks in Good Morning Storybrooke.
Yeah.
And then her character in this is a gold statue. So I don't know. I hope I'm just not reading into that too much, because I really enjoyed Good Morning Storybrooke. And I love Paul Scheer. I would love to have just even just a segment of them on the TV in the background. Like, that would just make me so happy.
Even if it's the one from the DVD, that's fine.
Oh, I would like an entire episode of just Good Morning Storybrooke, because that was hilarious.
Well, it almost feels like, you know, over the summer when Community's future was uncertain, they got Yvette Nicole Brown in to do a couple things, and maybe they were going to have her do something more major, but then Community got picked up again. So, and I'm pretty sure I saw a couple weeks ago that one more season for Community is looking pretty darn likely, so we might not get to see her too much.
It might happen, though, because I was talking to I mentioned it to Yvette Nicole Brown. I was like, I really like Goldie, and I enjoyed you as Ursula. She was just like, yeah, Adam. And Adam wrote me, he was like, really? And I was like, yeah, Adam. And so we kind of together tag team Adam.
Hey, nice. Hey. You know, I'm hearing you're very friendly with Adam these days.
I'm not very friendly. I don't know why he follows me. Like, and it's always so scary, because, like, I sometimes forget that Adam's following me. And so, like, I'll just be tweeting. And it happened a few days ago. And I was talking about, not a few days ago, like, one of the last episodes of the season. And I had mentioned how I didn't feel like it was really an ensemble cast. And out of the blue, a wild Adam appeared like a Pokemon. It's so true. He actually favorited, when I called him a legendary Pokemon, he favorited that tweet.
Nice.
He, like, wrote me. He was like, what do you mean it's not an ensemble? And I was so scared that I couldn't respond to him. And I even wrote, I think my answer was like, I can't respond to this without sounding like a jerk. And he goes, okay, thanks for watching.
And that'll be about it for this episode. Thanks again, Hope, for having us on. It was such a blast. Again, we're going to be putting out another special episode probably tomorrow, which would be Thursday or Friday of this week, with a special interview from Lytheris.com, I believe the website is, that we did a few months ago that kind of give you some insight into us, into the show, etc. And we'll be back for Wonderland on Saturday and for the regular Once Upon a Time show on Monday evening. So until then, greetings from Storybrooke.